The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
I'm John Wilkerson. Jimmy Hyams back with us today after he got a bit of a break, just as John McClain, who joins us now on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, was able to get a few moments of, we'll just say, rest and relaxation, hopefully last week. But good to have him back with us. John, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Happy 4th of July.
Happy 4th of July to you. We know and we've heard stories, but tell us, how are things going in your neck of the woods? How are things going in Texas and Houston?
Well, we set records every day for positive tests for COVID-19, and our governor, who refused to do what he should have done, medical experts told him weeks ago, and he opened it up too quick. And problem when you open it up is people act like the virus is gone, and so people didn't do what they were told, wearing face masks and social distancing, and we're paying a price for it, just like Florida, where I was last week. So our governor yesterday finally mandated a mask. If you don't, first, when you're in public places, if you first time you get a warning, second time you get a $250 fine, and I'll say it's about time.
John, you put together a piece that, as we get closer to the season, expectations, of course, are formed all the time, but in regards to the DeAndre Hopkins trade, what do you think are the appropriate expectations for the Texans with either the players and or draft picks that were used when they made the swap with Arizona?
They made that trade for Hopkins in March, and they got running back David Johnson, and they used a second-round pick on defensive tackle Ross Blacklock, which was their biggest need, of a defensive lineman who could penetrate from the middle. And then they, as part of that trade, I used in my column was, they, if they had not acquired that second-round pick from Arizona, they wouldn't have been able to trade their second-round pick because they would have had to use it on an interior defensive lineman. So it gave them the luxury of trading theirs. They traded it to the Rams for receiver Brandon Cooks. And so the way I look at it is they got Cooks, David Johnson, and Ross Blacklock for an all-pro receiver. And, of course, it's still an unhappy trade. We'll have to see how the season plays out to find out how it works out for both teams. But one of the things the Texans can do, David Johnson is a great receiver. He's proved it ever since he came into the NFL. He got benched last year in Cliff Kingsbury's first season. He missed three games because of an injury, but 2 years ago, he played every game, and he had almost 1,400 yards rushing and receiving and scored 10 touchdowns. And so I asked people on my show here, would you take that from him this season, knowing he's going to rotate with Duke Johnson, as Carlos Hyde had done, take almost 1,400 yards and 10 touchdowns? And, of course, everybody says yes. But he's got to stay healthy, and he's got to produce. Brandon Cooks has got to stay healthy. The Texans have the possibilities of having a lot of offensive weapons, but almost all of them have had recent injury issues, so it would be improbable to think all of them would be able to stay on the field.
John, New England signing Cam Newton, I thought it was interesting the numbers involved. So it's $7.5 million with incentives. His base is $1.05 million. $555,000 guaranteed. Are you surprised at those numbers?
I'm not, because he had no other offers and because he's coming off three major operations. When you're coming off three major surgeries, two on your shoulders and one on your foot, you're going to have to take a lot of incentives, and I don't care who you are, what position you play. So he's got a chance, if he plays well this season, to re-sign with the Patriots, and they'll have the option to franchise him if they can't reach an agreement. Or, of course, if they're not interested in bringing him back, he can sign somewhere else. I thought it was a really smart move for Newton, smart move for Belichick. The problem is Newton has the same problem Tom Brady had last year. They don't have a lot of weapons on offense.
No, they don't. The Washington Redskins, all indications are they will change their name. I want to get your reaction to that. But before I do, I know a lot of people say, well, it's about time. One of the things that has happened, according to what I've read, were the Native Americans did not object to the nickname, which is one reason I think it stayed as long as it did. But your thoughts on the Redskins heading in the direction of changing their name?
Well, I'll say this, Jenny. Most Native Americans object to it and claim that it's racist. There was a group, when this was a controversy a couple of years ago, that Dan Snyder, the owner, found and quoted them and used what they said. But the fact is, most Native Americans think it's racist. And a lot of big, you know, to change something like that, if he's going to do it because it's the right thing to do, he would already done it. But, of course, money figures into it. His partner, his primary partner, Fred Smith, had founded FedEx, and it's FedEx Field. He says they need to change it. And it wouldn't surprise me if Snyder doesn't somehow parlay this, because he needs a new stadium. He's let his stadium, which I think is about 20 years old, be in disrepair. It is a dump and a half. I was there two seasons ago. He's just let it deteriorate because he wants to get out of Landover and move back into the district, preferably where RFK Stadium is, and he wants public money. So I'm guessing he's going to have somebody lobbying the government to see if they can get public money to go back downtown, build a new stadium, and they'll do like the Wizards. They'll come up with a different nickname. Now, a lot of Redskins fans, of which my wife is one, she grew up in Washington, D.C., loving George Allen, Sonny Jurgensen, Billy Kilmer, Joe Gibbs, Joe Theismann, and all them. She is adamantly opposed to it, and she wears her Redskins memorabilia proudly. And no matter how much grief I give her about it, it's not going to change her mind. And like a lot of Redskins fans, she's unhappy that they're going to change the name. But it's inevitable, and there's nothing they're going to be able to do about it. It's just a matter of when and what it will be.
John, when it comes to a new name for Washington, we've seen other franchises make changes, relocate, and lo and behold, they wind up with names that were already owned by NFL properties. How involved would the league be in this decision by Daniel Snyder and his team?
One of the things about the Titans, when they were the Oilers and they moved, and remember, they were the Oilers for two seasons before they became the Titans, and I would imagine some of that memorabilia would be a collector's item, and just like Houston Oilers stuff here is a collector's item. So they were going to be the pioneers, and then it leaked out, and I think it leaked out in the Memphis Commercial Appeal, and Bud Adams quickly and quietly changed it to Titans. So I saw a thing today, I think Gil Brandt tweeted this, that there have been four franchises that changed their name while they were in the same city, going back to the Decatur Staleys, who became the Bears. And so Washington will be the fifth. And I'm guessing it'll have something to do with politics or something that we think of when we think of Washington, D.C.
Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. We'll get a break. We've got more with John coming up. Again, the program today is here in Maynardville. We're at Food City. It's the Big Ticket 2020 presented by Food City. Come by. We are set up just outside the door. It would be the right entrance. If you're facing the front of the supermarket, it's the right side. And you can come by, see what word that you should text to 68683. You must text it in before 7 o'clock to be in today's registration. And there'll be two finalists from those that register. register this afternoon. With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson. More with John McClain coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 9.1, The Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
Here's to swimming with bow-legged women.
This is Sports Radio WNML.
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. Our guest joining us on the Stanley Fencing Gates Hotline is John McClain of the Houston Chronicle.
John, the New England Patriots fined $1.1 million in a third-round draft pick over the film crew breaking NFL rules last year. Was that about the penalty you thought they would get?
Jimmy, it's been so long since that investigation started, I've forgotten about it. And they announced they signed Cam Newton at the same time, right before the league announced that penalty. So they wanted to one-up the league. Every time they've been in trouble, the league has told them, if there's another violation, we will come down harder on you. And that's the same thing they did on Deflategate after Spygate. Now they've done this one. They claim that it was an accident. There's nothing that the Patriots do that's an accident. And nobody bought it, and it was pretty stupid of them to do it. And so they lose the three. Bill Belichick always has extra picks, so that's not going to hurt them. And, of course, that kind of money, tip money to Bob Kraft.
Also, with the NFL, they've indicated that they are looking at fining players for, quote, reckless behavior, close quote. That includes going to restaurants or sharing rides. How enforceable is that going to be?
Number one, how would you know if somebody took an Uber? Now, they're not supposed to do that. They've got a lot of guidelines because of the coronavirus. And if they think that young players are going to abide by the rules, they don't abide by a lot of rules as it is. So I think you're going to see a lot of violations, but I don't see how it's enforceable. Are they going to be on the honor system? Oops, I took two Ubers the other night when I drank too much. And people, can you imagine the outcry? You're going to fine that player for taking an Uber instead of driving himself. So I don't think that'll ever happen.
John, we have heard more and more. First, it was, I believe, maybe Seattle and the Ravens. But what do you think in terms of Deshaun Watson saying that it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if Antonio Brown wound up in Houston? Any chance that happens?
Absolutely not. I don't know why anybody would be dumb enough to let a snake in your house that you know is going to bite you. If Mike Tomlin didn't want him and John Gruden didn't want him and Bill Belichick didn't want him, why in the world would people think the Texans wanted him? One thing Bill O'Brien says every time he talks about a player on the team he likes, he says, good teammate, over and over and over. Who is the epitome of a bad teammate? Antonio Brown.
When you look at the soap opera that continues to be Jamal Adams and his saga, any chance that the Texans would be a team that if he were to be moved, that he could land in Houston?
I don't think that he will be traded by the Jets. He's got 2 years left on his contract. He can complain all he wants about being underpaid. If he doesn't show up for training camp, he doesn't get credit toward a season is being invested, he would still owe them 2 seasons. Also, he would accumulate $40,000 a day fines, and he has to pay them. The team can't forgive him. And when you're making less than $1 million, that's $40,000 a day. Fines tend to add up. So I think they'll get him back. I think they'll sign him to a new deal at some point. But if indeed they made him available, Bill O'Brien, I'm sure, would check him out because they need a second safety. And if they had Jamal Adams and Justin Reed, they'd have the best twosome in the NFL. And he has said he will play under this year's contract, not try to get an extension. That's what they would have to have because they couldn't afford to give him anything any more this year. But they don't have first and second round picks. That goes to Miami for Laramie Tunsil trade. And I can't imagine if the Jets trade him, they would wait till 2022 to get a return on that investment.
John Maurice Smith, the head of the NFLPA, said that player workouts go against safety goals and protecting players before camp. I can't imagine, though, that there's been any change in the player behavior since Smith said that. Have you seen any indication that players have ceased with some of these workouts after Smith's words?
I don't know, because there was a lot of things going on we just don't know about. Don't know if some stopped or not. You know, we see Tom Brady thumbing his nose at the rules. I think it'd be very interesting if Brady or some of those guys that worked out with him and went against what the league and the NFLPA recommended test positive when they report for camp. And it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of players testing positive. Damian Lillard of the Trailblazers, I saw a story with him yesterday saying there's going to be a lot of guys break our rules.
Yep.
And I just don't understand it, but it's human nature. I'm thinking when I'm not here, when I was that young, if I'd had millions of dollars, you know, I knew I wasn't supposed to smoke. Everybody told me I wasn't supposed to smoke. I smoked until I was 33, knowing that I could get lung cancer and all the other things it did. And so I think there'll be a lot of players who flaunt the rules.
Also, in regard to NFL camps, do you think that there will be fewer than 90 players? I've read some concern about how many players they would bring together to camps. What do you see that number being?
They usually have 90, then they cut down to 75, then they cut down to 53, and last year it was just one big cut. Bringing in 10 less players, does that mean you got a less chance of getting COVID-19, or does it mean that you think it's more manageable? It's not manageable in any way, shape, or form when you're going to try to do what you're supposed to do off the field, and you let guys go out there and play and bleed on each other and sweat on each other all the time. So it's very hypocritical, contradictory. But the bottom line is everybody wants to play. The players want to get paid, and they know there's a good chance they could get it, and then they say, hey, I'll get over it. Most players do. Most people do. Not everybody dies, and a lot of them that do are older or have pre-existing conditions, which a lot of players do. They have people at home with those conditions. And I would imagine if a player is reluctant to come back because, say, he has a child with asthma or something, and then the child tests positive, he's going to blame himself for going to play football, even though it might not have anything to do with it, because you never know where it's coming from. So I think it's just going to be unbelievable to watch. It's going to be amazing how many players test positive, and hopefully all of them will be out a minimum of 2 weeks. They got to pass two tests in a row before they can come back. And there's a lot of athletes we don't know about who've already tested positive and are back.
Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. John, we kicked this around a little bit last week, and that is, once you get past Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, and Deshaun Watson, it's a very interesting conversation as to talk about who are the next best quarterbacks in the AFC. Who would be a couple of names that you would throw out there?
Oh, gosh, John, let's see. If he's healthy, Ben Roethlisberger, obviously. I'm going over the divisions. Most teams have young quarterbacks. Phillip Rivers coming off a bad season. I don't know where you would put him today. Derek Carr wasn't as bad as a lot of people thought he was last year. If you just look at his statistics and if he showed any improvement with John Gruden, he would be in probably the third tier of quarterbacks. Let's see, in the division that I'm in, Ryan Tannehill, if he could pick up where he left off last year, he would definitely be in that second group, but there's a big if about that. So there's some good young ones like Sam Darnold and Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield, guys that have flashed since they came into the league. So there's not a shortage, and Cam Newton, if he's healthy, and if some weapons develop in New England, Cam Newton's not young, but he would have to be put in that group.
And you were talking about it earlier that one of the challenges for either Cam Newton or Jared Stidham would be for what was very unattractive for Tom Brady to hang out for more time in Foxborough, and that is just not a, amazing weapons to work with on the offensive side of the football. What are the chances that Cam Newton can get back to anywhere close to his MVP style of play? Do you think that that's long gone?
He doesn't have a Steve Smith. He doesn't have a Greg Olsen. He doesn't have – he's got a good running game with Sonny Michel, but he doesn't have a tight end. What they need is Julian Edelman to stay healthy in the slot. Last year's number one pick, N'Keal Harry, who was hurt a lot as a rookie, to develop big time in his second season. That would help. And the offensive line is pretty good. It's better than Brady's offensive line in Tampa is okay, but it was good in New England. But Brady's receivers with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and Gronk, I mean, he's got as much talent at the receiver as any quarterback in the NFL, probably more than any of them.
John, we have seen a number of NBA players opt out of the restart. We got Mike Trout saying that he's uncomfortable playing, didn't say he would or wouldn't, said he was uncomfortable. There have been some players that have indicated they may not play in Major League Baseball. Do you think there'll be many in the NFL? Do you think there'll be a larger percentage or a smaller percentage of NFL players saying no compared to the NBA and Major League Baseball?
Well, there's a lot more players in the NFL than there are in baseball and basketball, so I would say it would be more players but a smaller percentage. Also, in baseball, if you say, I'm not going to play, you still get paid and you get credit toward a year of service. That's because you got a great union. Now, football hadn't necessarily said that, and if they don't, it's going to make them look terrible. But most guys play because they love the game. But I saw a thing the other day where most offensive linemen are considered obese based on the criteria they have. Some of the things, like if you're diabetic, there's a lot of guys that are type 2 diabetics. There's guys who have sleep apnea. That's another condition they're worried about. So there's a lot of things in each of those sports that players have that would keep them out if they wanted to be out. But I think it's rare that a player would just say, I'm not going to play. Ryan Zimmerman of the Nationals, his father's a surgeon, his mother is his father's a doctor, and his mother is an emergency room nurse, and he's about to have his fifth child, so he's opted out of the season, and I think there'll be more.
John, what are you working on this week?
I turned in a column for Sunday, John, based on the top storylines the Texans have had, top five storylines of the offseason that will affect their regular season. I've got podcasts on our Texas Sports Nation website, a column I did yesterday. Don't overlook their tight ends with all this speed and talent, is wide receiver and running backs who can catch the ball. And I appreciate you guys moving me. I hope you have a great fourth and stay safe.
You stay
thank
safe
you,
as well. John, thank you very much. That's John McClain
take
of the
care,
Houston
guys.
Chronicle. You too. Joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Sports Talk continues. We're here at Food City, set up today for the Big Ticket 2020 presented by Food City. You can come by, hit Food City, Maynardville Highway in Maynardville, 4344. You can see the word to text to 68683, and you'll be registered. And we'll have two qualifiers, two finalists from today's registration. It's the Big Ticket 2020 presented by Food City. We're here at Food City, Maynardville Highway in Maynardville for Sports Talk. Up next, Steve Hamer joins us for Hamer Time on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Stop. Hamer Time. You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. You know the music because it's Hamer time. Steve Hamer, Ball for Life, all-around great guy, normally joins us 6:35 on Fridays. We've got something special lined up for the second half of the show since it's our final program before, that meaning Sports Talk, before the 4th of July. So we will have a special presentation that centers on the 95 Tennessee baseball team. That'll be at 5 o'clock, and then after that, it'll be our annual All-Star Salute to Baseball with a lot of fun clips, songs, you name it. But we also will have our sports fix at 6. But right now we go to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline to say hello to Steve Hamer. Steve, how are you?
Hey, guys, I'm doing great. And I assume along with the festivities, you're going to have a hot dog eating contest somewhere in there thrown about, right?
That's right. And you, of course, have been nominated to lead the way.
I'm good for about a hot dog and a half, and then I'm done. So I won't be crazy.
Now, if this had been something that were during your playing days at the University of Tennessee, what do you think that number might have been if you were entered, say, in a contest at Lindsey Nelson Stadium?
Well, I'm ashamed to say, but, you know, I am a lover of the all-beef hot dog. So in my day, I probably could have thrown down at about, you know, six or seven. So I hope y'all don't think too less of me now and will have me on the show again from time to time. But I do love a all-beef hot dog, so I'm actually looking forward to watching the all-you-can-eat hot dog contest tomorrow on ESPN. I'm glad that that's not canceled.
Yep. We'll see if we get a new record when it comes to the annual Nathan's deal. It's unbelievable to watch how they operate. There's absolutely no way I could begin to approach their approach. But, Steve, we've had some very, very interesting conversations with all that continues to change before our eyes. You hear a decision today. Jimmy talked about it in News and Notes. You have a young man that is the number 17 prospect in the country. He's a five-star center, 6'11", 235 pounds, McCourt Maker. And he's being recruited by Kentucky, Memphis, and UCLA, to name a few. But he instead decides to go ahead and make his pledge to Howard. What did you think of Maker's decision, and what do you think in terms of his thought process that he wants to kind of lead a change where perhaps some of the top prospects consider some of the historically black colleges and universities?
You know, John, I think it's fairly groundbreaking in the fact that you got a young man who would have a fairly easy path if he were to go to a traditional powerhouse like the University of Kentucky in moving on and going on to play at the next level right away, you know, maybe playing 1 year or 2 years under Calipari or maybe going somewhere else and playing for other powerhouses. But I think it makes a statement. I'm proud of his decision. And I know that he made that decision with social ramifications in mind, in that he wants others to also follow. So, you know, I think, you know, the question is, will he be a trendsetter, or will this be a bit of an anomaly? I think he's going to be a trendsetter. I really do, because he's well-respected. He's got great game. So I'm thinking that others may follow and kind of level the playing field a little bit. I'm actually quite for it.
Steve, is there any chance it might hurt his NBA stock if he's not going against better competition?
That's a great point, Jimmy. You know, I thought about that earlier today because, you know, let's face it, the powers that be at that NBA level will look at him and think that he is not playing the level of competition that he needs to play in order to make that leap or that next step to that level. So, you know, that could hurt him in the short term, but numbers are numbers. Jimmy, you know, you look at a guy like Jerry Rice coming out of, you know, a small school. I believe it was Mississippi Valley State. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That went on to be a Hall of Famer, one of the best to ever do it. Steve McNair, same thing with him. You know, albeit in a different sport. So, you know, numbers are numbers. And I think if you produce at whatever level you're at, I think you can make it to that next level.
I actually covered a game when Jerry Rice played against Southern in Baton Rouge, and even I knew Rice was pretty good. So, yeah, they'll find you if you can play. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that you know, it rings true. If you can play at whatever level, they're going to find you. So you've got great prospects of going on to play at the professional level.
All right, you've got DeMar DeRozan, I think it was. No, wait a minute, that wrong. It was Damian Lillard who said that he doesn't trust some other NBA players following the COVID guidelines that were outlined. So my question to you is this. Would you be more trusting of a basketball player, football player, or baseball player to follow guidelines?
I'd be less trusting, to be quite honest with you, Jimmy, because, you know, these guys, they live on a in and of a bubble to themselves. You know, they're, you know, some of the wealthiest people in the world, and they have their entourages, and they kind of live these isolated lifestyles to begin with. So, you know, when you tell these professional athletes, hey, you're going to wear a monitor, you know, you can't get within 6 feet of another person, or an alarm will sound, you can't play, you can set a screen in a game, but you can't play doubles table tennis. So, yeah. You know, I think that these guys are going to balk at that, and they're going to sneak out. They're going to live, you know, the limelight that they're used to, and there's going to be, and I would not be surprised, within the first couple of weeks, you're going to see some people that are going to be isolated, that are going to be suspended, and they're going to be quarantined because they're not following the guidelines and the rules.
Our guest, Steve Hamer, as he joins us for Hamer Time this afternoon. Sports Talk continues from Food City here in Maynardville. Come get registered for the Big Ticket 2020 presented by Food City. You can come by, see the word that you're supposed to text to 68683. You have to do that before 7 o'clock, the end of the show, and you could be one of two finalists from today's registration. We get to this time in the calendar, Steve, and we close in on the anniversary of the decision. And ESPN, with the backstory, aired last night. Was there anything that you learned last night in watching that program about the decision that perhaps you didn't already know about that wild time?
I learned a lot, and I think ESPN did a phenomenal job of the story-taking part of that particular process. You know, we all know that LeBron James is a very, very smart individual, and he always tries to control the narrative. But we see what happens. We see the results when he and his team can't control the narrative. And I think that it got out of hand. It got out of control. And I think he suffered the consequences for it for a year or two. You know, a lot of the fans never came back to LeBron's side. Myself, you know, I'm a LeBron supporter, much more so because everyone hated him at that particular time. You know, now did I agree with the fact that they're making a super team? You know, maybe not. But at the same time, he was a free agent. You know, Chris Bosh was a free agent. Dwayne Wade's a free agent. And they wanted to team up and play together. So who's to tell LeBron that he can't go and play where he wants to? You know, and looking back this many years later, I think he would have certainly done it a different way. As you can see, when he signed with the Lakers, it was, you know, less fanfare, and it was just a statement put out by LeBron's team. But I think that he would have certainly done it a different way. So I learned a lot from the backstory last night.
You know, we found out about that core group of friends that were really tight. And are you surprised that we never got to see Carmelo Anthony at one point team up with LeBron and whomever, or Chris Paul perhaps? It seemed as though there was a tight group. They had wanted to get everybody in the same boat at the same time, but just weren't able to complete the super-duper team.
Yeah, and I'm glad of it. I really am. I think, you know, John, that was the beginning of the first super team, and I think you've seen several since then. You know, Kevin Durant, who was one game away from defeating the Golden State Warriors with Oklahoma City, and then he joins the team the next year, and you've got Russell Westbrook, who leaves Oklahoma City to go and play in Houston, and you got Paul George that goes to the Clippers. So, you know, I like the competitive balance, but I would have really been hesitant to have a Chris Bosh, a Dwayne Wade, a LeBron James, and you know, Carmelo Anthony and these other superstars get together, because I think it would have been very detrimental to the league at that particular point in time.
Steve, Rick Pitino, head coach at Iona, says that they should start the season in January and play conference games only. Now, I realize that's a smaller school, a smaller conference. Do you think there's any merit to doing that on a larger scale, whether it's the SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, or another major conference?
That's a great, great question, Jimmy. I think that has some merit. And when you look at the fact that the country as a whole is still continuing to see a spike in a mass surge in the coronavirus, you know, certainly these colleges are going to have some tough decisions to make, and maybe you know, it may lead some further credence to only playing your conference games starting in January and allowing the curve to flatten once again. You know, one of the things you have to also think about is maybe it's a good time for us to see this second spike. Maybe we won't see it in November. Maybe we won't see it in December and can get back to some sense of normalcy. But, you know, I kind of like that idea of maybe only playing if we have to, for the sake of seeing college basketball, playing only in January or February.
What do you think of the NBA discussing having an eight-team bubble league in Chicago? The eight teams that are not invited to Orlando, but they could go to Chicago and play. Do you think players would be excited about that? Or do you think that they would say, hey, there's not enough on the line for me to be playing here? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's definitely the latter, Jimmy. I think that there's not enough on the line for these individuals to risk their health, to risk an injury, because, you know, the NBA is going to turn right back around and start a season fairly close to ending this one. So, you know, I think that you need to let cooler heads prevail and just let them play within this bubble in Florida with the teams that they have and let the other eight teams start their or continue their break. I think you're raising all sorts of issues in terms of further exposing people in another city, exposing families, you know, again, exposing themselves to injury or whatever. So I think that for me, it's not a good idea.
Steve, if you were playing in the NBA, and how different do you think your decision-making process would be? A younger player that doesn't have a family, an immediate family, wife and kids, as opposed to a veteran player with wife and kids, and perhaps even a parent that is a part of the household. How different do you think the thought process and decision-making would be whether to play in the bubble in Orlando or seriously consider your options otherwise?
Yeah, I think that for me, the outcomes are going to be fairly similar. You know, say what you will, but it's a fairly serious pandemic that we're dealing with, and I know that the numbers do not indicate that it is as gravely ill to, you know, 25-year-old guys, 30-year-old guys as it is to 70 or 80-year-old guys. But you still have to think about the fact that with me, you know, I've got older parents. You know, my dad is 91 and my mother is 88. So if I were to have made that decision to go and play, I couldn't bring my parents to the game, and I couldn't go and see my parents because I certainly wouldn't want to be asymptomatic and bring something home to see my parents and have them fall ill. So, you know, it's a really, really tough decision for a 21-year-old kid or for a 20-year veteran in the NBA.
One more, Steve, and we always appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us. But tell me, if let's just say this is 4th of July, 2019. We haven't heard of COVID, and everything is right as rain. Tell me, when it comes to a 4th of July celebration / cookout / get-together, is there an item that folks, if they want to get any, had better be in front of you in line to get some? Otherwise, it's time for you to go to town. What is your favorite 4th of July cookout item?
Wow, way to put me on the spot, John. That's a tough
beef hot dog.
You know, that's exactly right. I think I answered that earlier, but you know, hey man, I'm a traditionalist, man. I want to eat several times throughout the 4th of July holiday. I'd like to sit and watch my St. Louis Cardinals play and have a burger and a dog and some chips, but that's pretty much it for me, and then watching fireworks anywhere on 4th of July night. So that's pretty much it for me.
Hey, Steve, thank you so much for jumping a little bit earlier in the schedule. Hope you and your family have a very safe and happy 4th of July, and we'll catch up with you next week.
John and Jimmy, thank you all so much. You guys have a great holiday weekend.
Thank you,
you
too.
As well. That's Steve Hamer joining us for Hamer Time on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment to hour number two of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Thanks for listening and making 99.1 The Sports Animal number one for sports conversation at work.
From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to LA.
Final segment to hour number two of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. Sports Talk today is here at Maynardville, the Maynardville Food City, 4344 Maynardville Highway for the Big Ticket 2020 as presented by Food City. And you have until 7 o'clock to come by, see the word that you text to 68683. And if you are one of the two finalists from today's registration, you'll be in the running for season tickets, Tennessee football, Vols and Lady Vols basketball with all the parking passes, Tennessee softball, Tennessee baseball, the Ice Bears, the Titans. It's all a part of it, as well as Jimmy Hyams, a club seat experience with one of the with a member of our staff.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, this is an unbelievable prize. It's worth a lot of money. If you're a sports fan, if you're a Vols fan, Titans fan, Ice Bears, there's so much to be offered there. And think of the friends that you could bring to these games as well. So it should be a tremendous prize. Hey, John, let me throw out a couple of quick notes, all right?
Okay.
Alabama's announced an assistant coach committed NCAA violation while recruiting. He has been off campus for 30 days. They've taken him off the road there. Also, a four-star defensive tackle, Peyton Page, is going to announce Friday night at 8 o'clock. He'll pick Tennessee, North Carolina, or Clemson. He's an Under Armour All-American from Greensboro, North Carolina. Watch that one at 8 o'clock. See what happens there. The NFLPA, the players have voted against playing any preseason games. And Kansas has suspended his football workouts following an outbreak of the virus. They have requested that all the players and staff self-quarantine for 2 weeks. And Ed Orgeron has taken up boxing. He's training 6 hours a week. His trainer said he's very strong and he's explosive. I can imagine.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
No.
Well, about the explosive part, he didn't take it up sooner. I just wonder if he would be drinking Red Bulls during a fight.
In between rounds.
Yeah, just have one cracked in the corner.
Another swig. Knock him out. Go Tigers.
Oh, goodness. And, Jimmy, how excited are you tonight for the five-hour block that will be dedicated to Johnny Majors on ESPNU? It starts at 6 o'clock with the Tennessee-Virginia Sugar Bowl, followed by Johnny Majors straight ahead, the VFL Films documentary, which we all know is going to be outstanding. That'll be at 8 o'clock, and then after that, it'll be the 77 Sugar Bowl when Pitt beat Georgia, as led by Johnny Majors, to claim a national championship. All of that tonight on ESPNU.
Well, and the thing I'm looking forward to most is the documentary Tennessee put together by Barry Rice. Barry Rice does an outstanding job, and I've actually seen those other games. I haven't seen this documentary, so I'm looking forward to the doc more than anything. But that should be a thrill for a lot of folks to have the opportunity to see that an inside look at John Majors.
And if you don't get to see it tonight, you've got a safety net in regards to the documentary. It will air Sunday at noon on Channel 8. But what we're going to do is get a break. Again, with the reminder, come on out. We're here at Food City in Maynardville, 4344 Maynardville Highway. You have until 7 o'clock to text today's word to 68683, and you'll be entered into the Big Ticket 2020. We'll have two finalists from today's registration. So come on out. They've also got the Q Smoke Meats that are here, which means you can go ahead and just sail right into the 4th of July weekend with everything taken care of, whether it be the pulled pork, the brisket, all the stuff that they do and do so well. When we return, some great memories from the 95 Tennessee baseball team. That's next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.